I think people are a little nervous about trusting themselves
What do you mean?
and not wanting to commit to liking something that they like without understanding why. And abstraction falls into that.
This is Something from Nothing, a podcast about the creative process and the individuals involved. I'm Justin Lewis. This week's episode is with Paul Arends, a visual and musical artist that would most certainly be described as abstract. And just as each piece of artwork Paul completes is unique, so is his story. This week on the show, how a trained architect and painter decided on full-time artist after years practicing architecture. Then, why he moved from the artist comforts of San Francisco to a small town in western Kentucky, and what that meant for his artistic pursuits. And then, with over 20 years of practice in the visual arts, the circumstances that led to him adding an innovative musical performing art to his repertoire. When I called his story winding, with many twists and turns, he responded with a witty response of how he would describe it.
Really convoluted with really very little logic.
Which is how some people may describe abstract art. Paul, however, had an explanation that connected reason and logic to abstract art.
I know, I mean, there's a logic behind how you work on a piece. There's a chemistry to oil painting. There's a chemistry to working with water-based things. And I'm quite aware of that. But I don't want to be bogged down by it. I mean, a lot of things I do is by chance. I like the idea of chance. So like all my water-based paint, I have it in a box. I blindly pull out one tube of paint, and that's the paint I'm going to use. When I'm done with it, that goes into an empty box. And I just cycle through. I never use the same color twice. I just cycle through that until the other box is full and this one's empty, and I start the process over. At this point, I don't buy any more oil paint. I'm cycling through it also. As a tube is empty, that's it. That color is gone until I find out at the end, what's this last painting going to be? It's probably going to be a green. I have a lot of green paint for some reason. But yeah, I work, I know how I like to work. I have specific tools I use. I know what my hand will do. I know what the chemistry will do. So I don't think about it. I let chance decide what the colors are going to do. And that's really interesting to me, because certain colors just happen through mixing without a lot of intention. And I don't want to be controlling. I want things just to evolve, and when they're done, they're done. There's a certain intellectual satisfaction that happens that says, I don't want to touch this anymore. There's a surprise. I'm surprised it went this way. I think I'll hold on to it. And if things have longevity, I will not touch them again. But then there are certain things that after a year or two or three, it's like, that's not done. I know more now. Let's dive into this again. Let's keep going with it.
Allowing things to evolve naturally and not being too controlling is a very self-aware description of this creative process. It also is a way to capture his winding, or convoluted, career. Paul was highly interested in the arts for as long as he can remember, with support and encouragement from his parents. He even won an award in elementary school for a painting. It was high school, however, that really set the stage for his love of painting. He recalled the impact of his high school art class.
And I remember our first oil painting, we had to do something representational. So, and it had to be in black and white. That was her only criteria for this painting. So I found a black and white photo of a grasshopper, like close up of its head, and I painted that. And then after that, we could do whatever we wanted. And immediately, the second painting I did was a painting of these lichens on a rock. It was abstract. It was done in shades of blue. It was with texture. It was this experiment. And then that led to more. And then it led to more. It led to, this was the bicentennial year. It was 1976. So I did a painting of fireworks. It's horrible. But, it was the beginnings of exploring what the tools do, how to make fireworks, what the brushes did, how I could manipulate these paints and colors. And
he couldn't keep himself from describing this process he has been so fond of for so long.
You just open up that tube and it had that smell and it was oily and it just grabbed me. And I've never stopped oil painting, even through college and onward, up until recently. I mean, maybe over the past, I don't know, five years, I haven't been playing with oil that much, but
why not?
Started exploring other things. Started exploring water-based paints like gouache, casein, certain acrylics, a lot of inks, just because they do different things. I always had a bias about water-based things. Acrylic paint to this day, I just don't like. I don't like what it does. I don't like the way it looks all that much. I don't like using it. But other things, the chemistry behind them, they do some interesting stuff when you start forcing them to work together. So it really always comes down to the chemistry. I mean, really, that's oil painting too. Eventually, I graduated from working with paint in tubes to buying raw pigments and mixing my own paint. And then you start discovering what different oils do and the proportions of solvents to oils and the reactions that can happen. So it's about the chemistry of what these materials can do.
What those materials do is eventually form a finished product, and Ball described his thinking on that part of the process.
I've never really been that interested or that concerned with the final image or the subject of the painting. I mean, composition and the paintings always work their way through to a conclusion. But it's the process of making marks, of moving paint, of chemical reactions, of setting up disasters and having to work backwards out of that. Those are the things that really excite me.
The excitement of painting, however, was not immediately pursued full time. After high school, with his parents' encouragement, Paul trained as an architect and pursued it as a career for 15 years. He never stopped painting, though. In fact, he went ahead and studied at the Art Institute of Chicago. It was while practicing architecture in San Francisco when he was pulled towards a career in full-time art. He was taking art classes at UC Berkeley, primarily just to use the art studios, when he found out about a new gallery.
It was called Hang, and they were looking for new artists. So I figured, well, nothing ventured, nothing gained. I got my portfolio together and I submitted it, and they called me up and said, yeah, we'd like to interview you and look at your work. And they decided to represent me. And that was one of the turning point moments, because I had to, I'm thinking to myself, it's like, this doesn't happen that often. And I have to take this seriously. I've got a gallery in San Francisco that wants to show my work.
So he quit his job at the architecture firm and painted full time. Paul said he painted every day and ended up teaching for the Academy of Art. For Paul,
it was just a really magic time.
And although a lot of really great things happened in the California city, he started to experience some discontent.
Then I just started painting the same paintings over and over. The size changed, the colors might have changed, but I was really basically painting the same painting over and over. And though that was very lucrative at the time, I wasn't liking that. And I didn't know what else to do there. And that's when a friend of mine told me about Paducah, Kentucky.
So Paul decided to check out this city.
That's still kind of a culture shock till this day, and I've been here for 14 years.
A river town that was in the early stages of the so-called Artist Relocation Project. The project encouraged accomplished and up-and-coming artists alike to live in a part of the city that was very old and run down.
Yeah, I was in Chicago visiting family, and I decided I'm just going to drive down and see what this is about. So I come down to Paducah, and I'm not sure really what's going on, but I'm driving down Broadway, and, you know, Rivertown, it was, you know, at that time, this is 2001, 2002, not a lot downtown was really looking good. You know, there was a lot happening, but like, not that impressive. Until I drove past Maiden Alley Cinema, and I look at the marquee, and they're showing Y Tu Mama Tambien, which is one of my favorite films. And it's like, man, this town is showing an X-rated Mexican film. Something's right has got to be happening here. Something right has got to be happening. So from there, I went to the Quilt Museum, and you know, quilts don't grab me that much, but the permanent collection is pretty impressive. It's like, wow, this is okay. And Carson Center was just under construction, so it was just the steel structure that was up. It's like, well, they're building this performing arts center. It's like, what is going on here? This is pretty cool. So I was kind of impressed. So I drove back to Chicago, flew back to California. I told Lewis all of, you know, about this. So it's like, well, we should go visit.
So he came back a second time. This time, he got a full tour of the artist relocation project. But
none of the city properties really grabbed me all that much. But I found these two abandoned houses on 7th Street. And the city didn't own them, but I eventually was told who the owners were. So I just went and talked with them. It's like, hey, you know, I'm kind of interested in doing something in Paducah. Would you be interested in selling your houses? And both of them, you know, they're hemming and hawing over this. And eventually they said yes. So I bought these two abandoned houses. That's when Lewis and I started designing the house that's here right now. We had two lots. We knew the gallery studio was going to go on one, the house was going to go on the other. And I wanted a guest house in the back for visiting artists, mm-hmm. so that they could come for a month. It was small. They could, you know, stay for a month, do something in the back. And it's like this was going to be the compound in Paducah. Mm-hmm.
He finally had the house and gallery put together in time to move during 2004. Paul, although in an arts district, no longer had the ease of finding shows and selling art that comes with being in a town like San Francisco. Paul did continue teaching over the internet, but he was in a position where his career was even more of a hustle. So he worked hard to get into galleries in Chicago and New York. He figured he could use some of his postcards
from past exhibitions, and I wrote a cover letter. And I literally sent two postcards and a cover letter to about 200 galleries in Chicago and New York. It's like something has to happen because I can't just be in Paducah, Kentucky. Something else has to happen. Right. And out of those 200...
He received 6 rejection letters. For the most part, he got nothing from the museums. But he did get one letter that showed some curiosity. Paul said it was inappropriate from the standpoint of the way to contact this particular gallery, but he believed he oddly intrigued them. The response from this New York City museum said,
"Interesting, the work on your postcard."
They requested photographs in a letter with 3 sentences. Paul followed the directions.
2 weeks later, I get a letter from them saying, "We like these pieces. Could you send them to us?" I said, "Sure." I box them up, send them to New York. A couple weeks later, I get a letter, and it's we'd like to hold on to these pieces, and we're having a group show. This is the fall of 2005, and we'd like to include them. And it's like, great! This is great! So I was like, good. I'm going to go to the opening, met gallery owner, directors. It was brilliant. It was a great time.
Paul showed at this exhibit for three consecutive years and had some momentum. Then, in 2008,
generally across these markets,
times weren't as great.
The speed with which we are watching this market deteriorate, we read everywhere.
The United States economy crashed, and that meant it was the end of that New York City show and his momentum. In 2009, he did have a show in Chicago that went well and was invited to one in France with less success. The art business was changing, though. Paul noted that with the change in economy during those years, oftentimes it is the arts that take the first hit. People are just not buying it the same way they once were. So Paul made another adjustment in his work. After doing a residency in London, he was inspired to try something new altogether, music composition. But this isn't your average music composition. I'll let Paul explain this.
The horizontal line of a drawing is time. Vertical axis is pitch. Okay. So I could take any photograph, any drawing, and figure out over a length of time what, by choosing instruments, choosing sounds with that pitch, I could determine what an image sounds like.
So Paul composes this music and had been able to collaborate with high-level musicians to create this extraordinarily unique style of music. With this music, Paul went on to perform a festival in London, a few live performances here in Paducah, one of those in an art gallery, another was performed in City Hall when international visitors were in town. In a performance with the art school employee Todd Birdsong, who is a sound recording extraordinaire, that I was able to see. The two performed in an empty storefront while spectators looked on. Paul has found with this collaborative effort that comes with music a new passion.
It's like, yeah, I'm never going to be on a stage trying to play Beethoven. I have no interest in trying to reevaluate history. But put me on a stage where I can do what I want to do with a group of professional musicians doing what they do, where we can create a moment, where we can create an atmosphere, where we can create this ethereal sound thing that you have to be there to hear. That's crazy exciting. That is so fun.
One of the things I learned about Paul is his willingness to adjust. Maybe it comes from the experience as an architect, or it could be the part of his brain that has nothing strongly planned out and allows his abstract paintings to not be too directed. Or it could be that this person is just insanely creative. Yeah, I think I'll go with that one. There's only to be continued with this artist as he has recently moved to Phoenix. In reference to his description of how he sees his own painting style, he has run out of paint in Paducah and is allowing his career to naturally evolve to the next place. When he is done, he'll be done. But fortunately for art appreciators of all types, that's not yet.
Thank you for inviting me to be part of this and for letting me ramble. There's nothing I enjoy better.
For more on Paul, you can find him on social media or his website. PaulLorenz.com. You can also learn more about Something from Nothing on social media, and access to all four seasons are at WKMS.org. Thanks to Taylor Inman for editing assistance on this episode. I'm your producer and host, Justin Lewis. Thanks for listening.